foreshadowing in your story, maybe even ominous foreshadowing to ratchet up the tension and the conflict, but don't really know how? Today, I'm going to talk about my favorite way to write easy, natural foreshadowing into any scene without it sticking out as obvious or the author is trying too hard. On top of that, doing it this way actually hooks the reader and makes them really rub their hands together and want to keep reading. So if you want to know what this method is, stay tuned. Hi there, aspiring fiction author. Welcome to Fiction Author Business School. Do you want to write your stories with ease and confidence? Do you find yourself Googling how to write a fiction book or how to write a character arc? Do you want to create a fiction empire, but you can't even finish the story you're currently working on, and you find yourself doubting it will even be good enough? Hi, I'm Liesl. I too have been writing stories since I was just a kid. I wanted to do something about my fiction writing dreams, but got information overload every time I looked for writing help, because there's just so much out there on the internet. I wanted confidence that I wouldn't disappoint my readers, and a plan to publish regularly. I knew the foundation of any author career, including the marketing aspect, is a stellar and well-written story, but I didn't know how to be sure that my story was solid. I went on a journey to figure out what really makes readers tick and how to incorporate those addictive elements into my story. In this podcast, you'll find specific, tactical fiction writing tips, solutions to writing more words more efficiently, and secrets to mastering your author mindset. So put on your fuzzy slippers, grab a notebook and pen and some chocolate, and let's write some fiction. Okay, so everyone always talks about foreshadowing. It's a word that we hear a lot, and honestly, I don't feel like we talk about it enough in the indie fiction community. It's really more of a word that's associated with interpreting texts, you know, like reading the classics in high school or college English class. But we don't talk about it much about its importance in the stories that we are currently writing, but it's actually really, really important. In fact, in my humble opinion, if you want to become a master storyteller, you need to learn how to use foreshadowing intentionally and prevalently. But how do we do that? Again, because it's something we talk about when discussing classic books, a lot of people tend to think of it as this elusive, mystical thing, okay? But it's really not. Like anything else, all you have to do is decide that you want to use foreshadowing, decide how you're going to employ it in your manuscript, and then just do it, right? Maybe we should start by defining what foreshadowing is. I could get technical and talk about how the Webster's Dictionary defines it as a warning or indication of the future, but in its most simplistic form, and you know, if we're talking about it being relevant to writing your fiction, really what it means is telling the audience what is going to happen before it does. Now, I know that's going to freak some of you out. You know, what do you mean tell the audience what's going to happen? I can't give spoilers. Okay, now I've talked about this pretty extensively before, so I'm just going to touch on it briefly. But just remember that the more you tell the audience, the better. Why is that? Because they're going to want to find out if it's going to happen or not. Okay, the audience is much more likely to lose interest if they have absolutely no clue what is going to happen in the story than if they have some idea what might happen. Now, maybe might is the operative word there. I'm not asking you to, you know, break the fourth wall and have a character turn to the audience and be like, oh, by the way, this is what's going to happen at the end, at the climactic moment. No, I mean, in fact, what actually happens should remain an unknown to the audience, okay? You don't want to tell them that. But you're telling them what might happen if the characters don't find some way to stop it or change it. And that's what's going to hook your audience, because they need to stick around to find out how it all turns out, right? So foreshadowing is a very powerful way to hook your reader, and that's why you should be using it as much as possible. I would tell you to be very heavy-handed about it. And even when you think you're being too heavy-handed about it, by the time it starts to feel that way, that's probably about the time that you've hit the right level, okay? Because what we all know that what you write on the page generally comes across as more subtle than we mean it to. So once you get to the point where it's so heavy-handed that you're starting not to like it, that's probably about the time that the reader will notice it in the way that you want them to, okay? So the question is, how do we go about putting foreshadowing in our stories? Well, you can do it really any way you want, of course. You know, there are as many ways to foreshadow as there are to write a story. So I sat down and thought I would come up with some examples. And thinking of Lord of the Rings, I mean, pretty much every character at some point in that story is foreshadowing something, right? Okay. So if you think about like the very first, beginning of the first movie of The Fellowship of the Ring, okay, we have Bilbo talking about the adventures he once had. We have him being a little bit dark and creepy about the ring at some point. You know, that's all foreshadowing. We have Gandalf telling Frodo about the ring. That's foreshadowing. We have Gandalf and Elrond talking about what happened a long time ago and how Frodo seems to show resilience to the ring. Okay, that's foreshadowing. Like, I started writing down examples. I came up with like 30 of them. One of my favorites, because it's a little bit more subtle, is when Frodo and Sam are still leaving, you know, and Sam stops and says the thing about how if he takes one more step, he'll be the furthest from home he's ever been. And Frodo says, Sam, we're still in the Shire. What could possibly happen? And, you just have to laugh at that now. Like, yeah, I don't know. What could possibly happen? So the point is, you can put foreshadowing, anywhere you want in your stories and use any of your characters to do it. Anything can be a foreshadow. But my favorite way to do foreshadowing is something a little bit more specific. All right. So remember last week on episode 221, I talked about the hero archetype, right? Well, my favorite form of foreshadowing comes in the form of another archetype, which is called the herald. What is a herald? Well, if you're like me, maybe the first thing you thought about was Christmas, as in Hark the Herald Angels Sing, right? But in that case, all herald means is that they are announcing something big, something that's going to change everything. And so in that case, the birth of Christ, right? And in Christianity, we also hear about angels with trumpets heralding Christ's second coming as well. So when you think of a herald, I almost want you to think of it as a person with a trumpet who is declaring something or making a big announcement, okay? Because that's what a herald is. In literature, it's a character who often comes in Act One of a story, though, as with everything, they can be used anywhere. Act One is just the most common place we see them. But it's a character who issues a challenge or announces the coming of a significant change. Very often, they literally give the call to adventure to the protagonist. Okay, that's very common to see. So, like I said with the Lord of the Rings examples, anybody can be a herald. Remember that an archetype doesn't have to be a specific character. I mean, it can be, but it's more of a function that the character fulfills. So anyone can be an archetype at any point. But then there are other things that can, you know, function as heralds as well. Things like the weather or a story or a prophecy. A prologue is very often a herald of what's going to come in the story, okay? In terms of it being a unique character or any character, let's talk about a few of these. So Vogler uses the example of Field of Dreams and saying that the voice, right, out in the field is actually a herald. And he's right. You know, Ray, played by Kevin Costner, is just bopping along in his life. You know, it's pretty mundane, but he's pretty content. He's, you know, things are going well. And then the voice shows up and says, if you build it, they will come. And his whole world ends up being upended, right? So the voice is a herald. One of my personal favorites is in a very old movie I grew up on called The Neverending Story. I'm kind of wondering if anyone my age remembers that movie. It's still around. You can find it. You can stream it on, I'm not sure exactly where, but it's very old. The acting is pretty bad. And the special effects and things are the dazzling special effects of the 80s. But the story is actually still really solid. And that's probably because it came from a book. But my point is, at the beginning of that, we have a man who clearly works for the Empress, and he is one who actually does issue the call to adventure to our main character. He asks the main character, whose name is Atreyu, to go on a quest. And more importantly, not only is Atreyu apparently the only one who can possibly take on this quest, but he talks about, the herald talks about how it's going to be very hard. It's going to be very dangerous. He's going to face all kinds of danger. It's something he has to do alone. He has to leave all of his friends and his weapons behind. Okay, this is classic herald stuff. And with him, he actually was more than likely a character who was created to be this herald, because we literally never see him again in the story. He gives this call to adventure and this kind of doomsday sort of heraldry to the main character, and then we never see him or hear from him again. I don't even know if he has a name in the movie. But that would be another type of herald. So it's not just a character acting as a herald, but a character that was created to be a herald. Now, another thing that you might want to think about that's kind of fun is in medieval times, knights often had heralds that would kind of act as their spokesmen and their announcers. You can see this, a really good example of this in the old movie, A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger, right? So they have the character Geoffrey Chaucer ends up being the knight's herald. Now the heralds would, they would of course announce, you know, their lords or their knights who they worked for. But very often what their function was to strike fear into the hearts of the opposing side. So if you have a knight that's going to joust, then the herald is going to, you know, be extolling the virtues of his knight. But a lot of times that comes in the form of he beat the crap out of this person. He unhorsed that person. He took down this knight that was three times his size. You know, they're trying to instill a little bit of fear into the other side by saying how tough and how strong and how wonderful their knight is. And so keep that in mind, that that is the function of a herald too. I'm going to get into this a little more in just a minute after we go over a few more examples, but herald generally isn't saying things that are very good. Let's put it that way. It's not necessarily a good foreshadow. It is a foreshadow of conflict to come. Okay, so that's an important thing to remember. A few other examples here, though. For anyone who remembers the series Gossip Girl, they had a voiceover. They had Kristen Bell doing a voiceover at the beginning and ending of every single episode. She was supposed to be like a gossip columnist, and she was very often a herald saying what would happen, what might happen, and that kept people coming back to watch the next episode. It was very much the beginning and ending voiceover more than anything else that would really, you know, hook people and want them to watch more. So also keep in mind that the herald, the message of the herald can come directly or indirectly. So if you have someone specifically talking to the protagonist, that's obviously a direct herald. But indirectly, too, can come in the form of a story. It can come in the form of a prophecy. It can come in the form of something that they hear, so they're not witnessing it directly. I believe I've talked about this before on the podcast, but one of my favorites that's an indirect herald comes from The Wheel of Time, which is my favorite fantasy series. And it's literally one of the main characters hearing a story about something that happened. So he was not witnessing it firsthand. And it was somebody saying that this young woman showed up. She was from a desert people that are thousands and thousands of miles away. So they couldn't understand how or why she came this far west, you know. And by the time they found her, she was on a wagon, but she was dying mostly from the elements. She looked like she'd been kind of beat up. I mean, not necessarily like someone beat her up, but more from the elements. She was starving and hadn't had any water. But she gives this really intense prophecy of, you know, this person who's been prophesied that's going to break the world and cause all this upheaval and wars and chaos has come. And then she dies after she says it. So it's very dramatic. And, you know, when you're first reading that series, you have no idea what that's talking about. You know, you don't know who this person is who's been prophesied, or you certainly don't know that one of the main characters that you already know and love is that person, you know. So, but it creates this adrenaline, and you want to keep reading to find out what the heck this woman was talking about, you know. And so that's what a herald does. It's a way to grip them, to tell them what might happen, and to keep them reading, right? So like I was saying a minute ago, it's not just what they say, it's also how they say it. We need to be looking at tidings of pretty intense doom and gloom here, okay? So a herald is not going to be like, you shall no longer wear that blue shirt. No. It's got to be real life and death stakes here, okay? But keep in mind that it also needs to be somewhat genre specific. So it doesn't have to be, you know, I've talked about death stakes before and how there are physical life and death stakes, but then there are also romantic death stakes. There are intellectual death stakes. There are financial death stakes. You know, keep that in mind. It needs to be specific to the genre that you're writing and this kind of story that you're telling. So in fantasy, more often than not, it's probably going to be actual life and death stakes or possibly some sort of tyranny stakes. But what if you're writing a Victorian romance, you know, something along the lines of Jane Austen or even Shonda Rhimes? Well, in that case, the herald might be someone telling the main character that there's a particular woman who is really rich and really snooty, and she wants to be socialite of the year. And if anybody, you know, gets in the way of what she wants, she's going to take them down, in this case, socially, through spreading rumors of scandal or something like that. Or maybe it's a matter of the most eligible bachelor and this woman's after him. But the audience kind of knows that our main character heroine is pure of heart. So, you know, maybe she'll get him. And you know what I mean? That can be a herald too, but that would be specific to that particular genre and that particular type of story. So just keep that in mind. The doom and gloom doesn't have to be literal life and death. Now, Let's talk about what to do in order to make intentional use of a herald, okay? As we've already talked about, you want to make it sound doomsday, but at the same time, you also want to be mostly vague. So this is one of those times I'm going to absolutely contradict myself point by point here. I'm going to tell you that you need to be vague, but you also need to use details. It needs to be doomsday, but also not absolute, okay? And I get that it's just, that's frustrating, but it's a balancing act. But let me give you some examples and try to unpack this a little bit. You want to put in enough tantalizing details that it's kind of specific to whatever circumstance you've created in your story. So if it's just, it will be dangerous, that's not interesting enough. You know, you need to be really specific to the story you're telling. So, you know, in the case of the Wheel of Time, by the time that herald came, the story of the woman on the wagon who died, we already had a pretty good idea of the world. This was several chapters in, and the world they lived in, and the kinds of things they believed. So talking about this prophesied person, we had actually already heard that this was part of their dogma, and this was something people talked about a lot. And so it made sense in the context of the story. That's what I mean. You need to make it detailed enough that it's not too vague or too boring, but at the same time, we don't want to give away the farm, right? We don't want to be telling them specifically what is going to happen, just things that might happen. And of course, we're portending that the characters are going to go through a lot of conflict and a lot of trial. And that's, you know, as any story should be. But you're just really gripping the reader by doing that. So some things you can do to make this happen. Like I said, make sure that you're putting in enough details, but not telling what's going to happen in the climactic moment, just what might happen. You can use if-then statements, okay? I remember back a while ago, 10, 20 years ago, they used to tell us to put if-then statements in blurbs. We don't really do that anymore. That's not selling books anymore. But there was a time when they would, and it would be something like, if whoever the protagonist doesn't figure out who the killer is, then, and, you know, there are still some sort of if-then statements in blurbs, but it's just not as heavy-handed as it used to be. But this is actually a really good thing for a herald to do, is like, and of course, you would have to make it so that it's makes sense in the context of what's being said and everything. But the idea, anyway, is if nothing changes, if the characters can't figure this out, then this doom and gloom thing is going to happen. So your herald doesn't literally have to say that, doesn't literally have to use an if-then statement. But that's the idea when you're crafting what they're saying, is that they're saying this is going to happen, but there's an implication of unless something changes or the character can fix it, right? So that's a good thing to use. Another thing is that you can talk about the implications of what's going to happen while not actually telling them what's going to happen. So I thought of this when I was thinking about Harry Potter. Let me explain. I was trying to, again, just think of different examples of heralds, and I was thinking of the very first part of Harry Potter, as in when McGonagall and Hagrid and Dumbledore are putting the baby on the doorstep of the Dursleys, which in the book it's not a prologue, but it sort of acts like a prologue to the rest of the story. And both McGonagall and Dumbledore function as heralds there. You know, they're saying things like, are the rumors true? Yes, the good and the bad, you know. And then McGonagall says the thing about how this boy will be famous. There's not a child in our world who won't know his name. All of that is heraldry because we don't know what they're talking about. And they're heralding stuff that we'll learn later in the story. They're heralding things that Harry will experience later in the story. Okay, all of that is heraldry. But I was thinking about kind of trying to dissect what McGonagall was saying there and notice that most of us probably don't remember what we were thinking the first time we read that or watched the movie, right? But as a first-time reader, you wouldn't know why he's famous. You wouldn't know what he did. Okay, so that's a very intriguing thing to the reader. That's going to pull us into the story. Now, what they're talking about in that case actually wasn't something that happens in the climactic moment. It was just learning what happened in Harry's past. So I guess it had more to do with the character wound, you could say, and the backstory of the character, which is another kind of intriguing thing to think about when it comes to heraldry and how you can make use of that. But the point is, when we see that first scene, this is what I mean by being specific but not telling us all the details of what's happening. They didn't tell us anything about a dark wizard. They didn't tell us that Harry's parents were dead. I don't think. If they did, sorry. But they didn't give us details about it. They didn't say that the dark wizard tried to kill Harry and somehow this baby survived. They didn't tell us any of that. That's all stuff that Harry learns later on, right? What she does say is the implications of it. Because of what happened, quote unquote, what happened, Harry's going to be famous. There's not going to be a child in our world that doesn't know his name. So you see how that creates a lot of intrigue on the part of the reader. And we just go, okay, I got to find out what the heck they're talking about. I got to keep turning pages and find out who this kid is, right? That's exactly the kind of thing a herald should do. And that's why it's my favorite kind of thing to use, because it's so much fun to play with, right? You can create so much intrigue and so much mystery and get people all worked up and get their adrenaline going. And readers, because they're curious by nature, because they understand the nature of stories, they just yearn to find out what it is you're talking about, and they have to keep turning those pages, okay? So it's a way to keep them intrigued, keep them hooked, keep them turning pages. And a herald, it's a very, generally tends to be a very on-the-nose kind of foreshadowing rather than something just said in passing, but it's very, very effective at intriguing the reader. And that's why I love it so much. Okay, so like I say, heralds, they do tend to be a little bit more obvious and on the nose, but they don't have to be. It definitely can be something that's said in passing. You know, you can employ it any way that you want. Looking over my notes here, I think that's most of what I have. Keep in mind that heralds, they always call for change. That is their function. And they also motivate. Sometimes they are the ones that get the protagonist moving, especially if they're a reluctant protagonist. So again, that was very obvious and on the nose when it comes to Neverending Story, because he was literally calling Atreyu onto a quest. But it can be a little bit more subtle than that, too, if you're writing a different genre. I think that's most of what I have. Your homework, then, is just to think about how you can employ a herald in the current story that you're working on. Can you create a character to be a herald or use one that you already have? Can they say something in passing that's just pretty casual, or does it need to be more on the nose, because your genre does that? You just kind of have to think about it and decide what's best for your story. But do it in a way that is genre and story specific, and in a way that it's not obvious that you, the author, are trying to communicate to your audience, okay? So no monologuing, but just have a figure out a way that feels natural in whatever scene you're writing to actually communicate some sort of foreshadowing to the audience. And overall, just have fun with it. This is one of my favorite parts of stories to play around with. In fact, I would argue that if you're writing an extended story, like a series, the entire first book can and should be full of heralds and foreshadowing for the rest of the series. That's something that I do too. Just ask anyone who's ever read Dragon Magic Book 1. That's about it for today. So go forth and write some heraldry that will get your readers salivating for more. And remember, there will always be a market for awesome. I'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening today. Before you go, would you be willing to do me a solid? If you found any value at all in this episode today, would you be willing to share it with other authors just like you, in the hopes that they might find some value in it as well? Happy story crafting this week. Remember, only you can bring the world the unique story that you are trying to tell. Only you can succeed in your own unique way in getting it out of your mind and your heart and into a medium where it can reach thousands, if not millions, of salivating readers. You don't have to worry about failure, because there is always a market for awesome.